we realize that our dilemma goes deeper than shortage of time. It is basically the problem of priorities. Hard work does not hurt us. We all know what it is to go full speed for long hours, totally involved in an important task. The resulting weariness is matched by a sense of achievement and joy. I just thought of Jean turning in her manuscript, Cal. It's kind of like, after 2 years of hard labor. Not hard work, but doubt and misgiving produce anxiety as we review a month or a year and become oppressed by the pile of unfinished tasks. We sense uneasily that we may have failed to do the important. And that's what gets to us. It's an anxiety that grows and builds, not simply because tasks are unfinished, but because we think important tasks lie unfinished. And so the critical factor for you in planning your time is to plan carefully in terms of what is really a priority item in this situation. And I would simply acknowledge that a priority judgment is a value judgment. Your priorities are statements of your values. So it may help you to think in those terms. I should have an overhead on that, but I must have left it in another folder. Now, let's talk about the devotional life for a minute. I almost never have written any objectives regarding my devotional life. Now, I've just said that's my life. That's the most important thing. Why would you think I've never written anything related to it? Or hardly ever? Right. It's part of my habitual pattern of living. It's almost like a habit in a good sense. I know what time I'm going to go to bed because I know what time I want to get up. Or I know I make a decision if I'm going to stay up later, knowing that that's going to mean I'll get up early anyhow. Or whatever. It's a way of life for me. I don't need to write objectives in it in terms of have one. I may need to write an objective occasionally. Roger, you're getting in a rut. In fact, this year, I didn't write an objective, but I just decided I am going to follow this particular method this year to see what I can learn. And so I am in a different pattern than I've been in before for that reason. But it wasn't a written objective. It's just, I'll do that. So, but I write objectives and set priorities in areas where I know if I don't do something specific, I'm going to miss out on what is really important. Now, for me, that could be currently, I've allowed a very poor habit or a pattern of life to emerge in the last 3 or 4 years that is new to our marriage that is unhealthy. Jean and I have consistently maintained for years of our marriage a weekly time together for communication and just to get away and relax and talk and kind of get caught up on things. And in the last 4 years, I've allowed that pattern of life to slip. Now, the only way that I can adjust that is to sit down and say, this year, that will change. And so it's very important, so I have to make a specific effort to go after it. But I'm not going to write a dozen different objectives. I look at life and I say, there's one that needs attention. So I'll go after that for this present time. Another thing to note is that a priority high priority is not the same as saying it needs a high amount of time. Time and priorities do not necessarily correlate. Okay, that makes sense. A good example, Matthew 5, 23 and 24. It's a high priority to be reconciled if I've offended somebody, but that may only take me 2 minutes to run in and say, Gene, I'm really sorry I did this. But God says that is. I mean, you can't live with unresolved interpersonal relationships. Finally, it's not priorities should not become a preoccupation with the insignificant. What do I mean by that? Well, maybe it's back to form and function, goal versus means. But I thought of an illustration. During World War II, General MacArthur called in the head of the engineer battalion, or maybe it was a company. I think the article said he was a lieutenant or a captain. He said, Lieutenant, we need a bridge across this river. How long will it take to get the plans drawn up? And put the bridge across. And he said, I imagine about 3 days, sir. So he said, fine.
Have the
blueprint department draw up the plans and get it done. 3 days later, the guy reported back. And General MacArthur said, how are things going? He says, fine, sir.
The bridge is up and ready to roll.
But the plans ain't done yet if you don't need them.
Now,
that guy was smart. He understood.
We need a bridge,
not plans.
I had a fellow work for me
as an administrative assistant.
Now, administrative assistants
like to handle paper, right? So
So I
gave him a project, and it was
a major project.
And so after about 2 weeks,
I called him over and said,
you know, I've got a problem, Reg.
He said, what's that?
I said, yeah, we're already about a week behind on this thing. I said, I've watched you
operate, and I said,
you do a great job of drawing up forms and plans and laying all this thing out. But we've got a project to complete.
Not plans to write, okay?
I appreciate your thinking. I called you in because I valued it. But I don't want you to play the paper game. I want the project done.
Now, that's
how we can get sidetracked.
Very easily.
When we lose sight
of what we're really trying to do.
A quiet time, for example, is
to seek
to put my soul
in communion with God.
It's not
to read so many
verses. It's not
to get through my prayer list.
It's not
a lot of things.
And I may forego my plan for the morning because I'm not
in tune.
And the only thing I end up doing that morning is
seeking to get my soul in tune with God,
because that's why I'm
there.
Not to go through
all the other motions.
Does that make sense?
Okay.
And then
the other thing I would say about
priorities is that they need
to fit within the context.
I've tried to remove the idea of
God,
family, etc. And instead,
I would
look at my life. I come to work, and I look at that, and I talk to
Terry Taylor,
my boss, and I look at the project, and I create
a priority system
of what needs to be done first.
When are the due dates?
So that I can keep
track
and ensure that I am providing
for Terry what
he needs when he needs it.
So I
prioritize within the
context
of that week or that day
or that month,
but I'm not
trying to prioritize
the
scheme of life
in that way.
I look
at my family, and I
know right now that there
are a couple things that are
really critical
in terms of my
initiating
things and in terms of
time with
members of the family.
Well, it's very simple.
I will forego accepting
certain
invitations or
scheduling
some other activities
in order
that I may ensure
that I'm getting
the kind of time I ought to be getting
in order to
meet that current
priority.
So it seems to me that a priority
fits within
a frame or a context,
not
in terms of an overarching thing of life. Then finally,
once
I've got my plan and
objective, I need
to go to something a little
different.
I'm going to quote Lauren Fanny here. He says, planning is not
complete until there's
a clear statement of what you're trying to accomplish and some program to do that. And that program involves
putting
something into a schedule. Now,
I know
that if I don't start inserting in my
calendar
dates with my wife that
she might be gone,
that my priority
and objective
to ensure that our relationship
is happy
and growing is never going to be met.
Because
life will happen. I'll be in a passive stance
instead of
an active stance.
Is that
an illustration?
In terms of
bringing to pass what needs to be
done
in our family.
What?
The schedule then helps me to
do that.
And the thing I would...
I picked up
this quote.
Well, you have
an opportunity to
choose what you're going to do with your time. What I do
is turn obligations to your
advantage
and turn the things you want
to do into obligations. Example.
I have wanted
to work
on this thing of balanced life.
Guess
how I get myself
into working on it.
I volunteer to do a seminar.
And it
forces me to do some thinking
that
I would never get done.
I did
not turn what I want to do into an
obligation.
The other thing is I look
at it,
I've got to be in that office every day.
I also know
that to work effectively as
a member of the
leadership team, I must
do that.
Okay. Let's
move then
on to discussion of the
final
first analysis that you did. Philippians 4, 11 to 13. And we will return to
the
format we've been doing with discussion of the primary
teaching
and lessons in this
related
to how to live life. So if you'll just move into
your grips,
we'll take 20 minutes to do that. Pardon? Has an
acceptance
quality in it? Okay.
Satisfaction.
Okay. So there's a contentment is a certain acceptance and satisfaction and recognition that
what's
here from God.
Now,
how do you relate that thought with chapter
3?
I've not arrived. I
press my
mark. I strive.
I
labor. How do those two chapters or two passages go together? Right? Ooh, that's powerful. Say that again. That's very good.
Because it is a learned attitude. It's not something that you just arrive at.
Uh-huh.
That you learn through a process. You'll never completely arrive at complete contentment. But even Paul, it took him a while to get used to that thorn.
Okay, Chris?
I was going to say a similar thing. Is that it seemed that he was very aware that he was involved in the life process and that God was the one that pulled the cords.
Okay, so we've moved just slightly here from the idea of contentment to the process of learning contentment. And as you looked at the verb tense, I'm sure you would have picked up that it indicates a process. The day he became a Christian, he was not suddenly content. The whole language of the verse indicates there was a process, however long it went on, of struggle, till that day came when he can say, I see it. And from that point on, life for him was different in the way he viewed what was going on. He saw life differently. Go ahead, Cal. In fact, all of them could contribute toward it. Which, that's superb. The goal, the striving, the pursuit had to do with character, Christ-likeness, whatever. The contentment had to do with circumstances in which he found himself. Yes. This is somewhat of a passive thing, isn't it? I accept it as it is. I'm not going to try to change all these circumstances. What I think that I wanted to get at there is so much of our thinking on managing life has to do with control. And there's an awful lot that's way beyond us. It's uncontrollable. We simply have no say in a great deal of life. Example. Our house is for sale in Washington. It has been for a year. And I'm very discontent with those circumstances. But God is using that to work on me because it's beyond me. It's beyond my ability. I can't control the economy back there. I can't control who's going to come by my house. I can't control the realtor. There's absolutely nothing I can do beyond what I've done. I've got to accept that as from God for him to do with me whatever he wants to do. And that's part of life. And it's important for us to learn to accept what God brings as part of his program for us. George MacDonald wrote this, "No man can order his life, for it comes flowing over him from behind." There's a certain element of truth to go with the flow, gang. The one secret of life and development is not to devise and plan, but to fall in with the forces at work. To do every moment's duty aright, that being the part in the process allotted to us, and to let come, not what will, for there is no such thing, that is a fatalism, but what the eternal thought wills for each of us, has intended in each of us from the first. And so he's simply saying, when life comes over you like a tidal wave, go with it. Accept it as from God. Let it become useful in the sense of cooperating with what God is doing instead of growing angry and bitter and frustrated and all the things that are destructive to us. Learn to accept life. Well, I think this statement relieves me of the responsibility to control everything. It indicates the process of growth, which you've brought out. And the other thing is it helps me to accept my personal limitations. There are just some things that I cannot do or deal with or handle, and that's of God. Yes. First Corinthians 7 comes to mind immediately because I was doing some thinking in a relative to this workshop on it, where Paul says, "Remain in the calling wherewith you are called." And when he speaks to slaves, he says, "Understand that you're free. You really are free people in Christ." And so he says, "Live as free people, though you're servants." But, and don't, you know, try to unite and rise up against your rulers, but if the opportunity comes for you to become free, do so. And so, I think there are times when it would be appropriate. There are other times when it's just, I think an awful lot of anger in the United States today is because people are upset and frustrated with things they can do absolutely nothing about. We cannot change the economy of the world. We cannot change what's happening in defense for any great degree. We're not going to change the U.S. debt overnight, maybe ever, until God collapses everything and starts again. So those are some things you just, that's life.
You think on the other side of the coin, too, I think of Paul, and because of the learner's mentality he seemed to have, he said he learned to be content. He might have also put himself in the circumstances other than what God had provided to teach himself things. Really, almost in a sense, brought hardships upon himself.
Mm-hmm.
That by putting himself in circumstances, he was going to learn as part of the process.
Well, I'm not sure he intentionally went out to get in trouble. But when things happened, he let God use that. Yes. Well, because he had a commission from God of what he was called to do, that's again some of the parallel life of Christ. Christ set his face like a flint toward Jerusalem. His disciples cowered, tried to talk him out of it. In fact, the picture, I forget which gospel it is, that every time I read it, I see Jesus about 20 paces out in front of the men. And he's striding away, and they're doing everything they can to try to hang back and get him to change his mind on where he was headed. I thought it might just be fun to look at the characteristics of life that come from the kind of life Paul was talking about. Joy, 4:4, all through the book, of course. 4:5, generosity of spirit. 6 and 7, peace. Might add thanksgiving to that. 4:11 to 13, contentment. We go back to 3, the idea of energy. 1:12, and that section in there, perspective, chapters 1 to 3 also indicate goals. There's an awful lot packed into that book of Philippians as you think about it, and which may help to further develop the concept of just how to live life. Now, in terms of this session of troubleshooting, yes. Well, I only do that with something that I think is not that big a deal. And so, but if you want to get those references, fine. The thing that put me onto this, by the way, is I was fascinated when I did your surveys. I marked whether it was a man or a woman as I was trying to jot notes on each one to see if I could discern any difference there. I really didn't. But there were two people I saw significant difference in their answers, and that was Chu and Marisi. And so I thought it highlighted to me how we tend to think culturally. And there, what they had to say was significant, and I'm going to mention that in a bit. But the idea of characteristics of a balanced life hit me after reading Chu's paper. And that's why I quickly looked at, I happened to be in Philippians 4 at that point, and so I started looking through that, and I thought, oh, yeah, so maybe these will fit. there are some questions, a couple, that I felt I would not deal with because they don't fit, they fit in this context, but they fit better in more specialized context. One of the questions that came up in more than one instance had to do with balance in relating to the opposite sex. And I felt that fits far better in the context of a seminar on interpersonal relationships because there's so much goes into it besides what we're doing. Now, regarding choose note, here's where I began to think of characteristics. When people talked about being out of balance, they talked in terms of activities. Chu said this, I'm not sure. I can't really say how I can name what would happen when it is. Lack of time, energy, motivation, willingness, patience, endurance, gentleness, strength, hope, eagerness, and good attitudes. Ah, she's on to something. Signals. Feeling defeated, lost, failure, guilty, sad, lonely, angry, weak, hopeless, inferior. Needs, long for consolation, love, caring, understanding, attention, someone who would listen and accept me. Now those, I mean, that was an insight into this thing that I thought was well worth surfacing to the group as an item of attention. And then Marisi came from a totally different perspective, but she talked, made two statements. I sat back and laughed. And I thought, what wisdom from God. She's on to something that nobody else was talking about, but really is the issue. The much that I hear and the not too much that I learn. The much that I learn and not too much put in practical ways in my life. How do you like that? That's a little too painful to chuckle at, isn't it? Oh, that's potent. Now, those are probably the issues of balance in life, aren't they? Living up to what we know. Now I'm going to start out with some questions from the survey. And what I'd like to do, I copied this one verbatim and thought I'd start with it because it covered several issues that kept surfacing in a number of ways in the survey. So listen to this, jot yourself some notes or maybe use your own survey. But what I want you to do is, what are the issues involved here in light of what we've talked about today? How would you counsel this individual? How my life reflects being out of balance? It's fairly lengthy, so listen carefully. Inconsistent devotional prayer life. Usually don't spend enough time with people, especially when there's a time pressure on getting a task done. I'll focus in on the goal and ignore people, my own social needs, emotional, spiritual, physical, and mental needs. My exercise program is always out of balance. I identify with that. I procrastinate with assignments and other tasks, resulting in a last-minute rush to get things done. My eating habits are out of balance. My correspondence is out of balance. I send out a lot of Christmas letters, otherwise my letters are few and far between. Keeping up with little things, cleaning house, paying bills, errands, are often left to pile up when I'm busy with assignments and work. Anybody identify with that? Some of your answers were a little too brief for me to comprehend exactly what direction you were taking it. This one seemed to capture so much in a comprehensive way, I thought we needed to start there. What are the issues involved in this particular situation?
I'm really, you're supposed to have learned. I've quit now. Okay. Let's see. So it could be, let's see, I need to find another, so one issue is habit patterns of life. That's a possible problem.
Realizing their limits.
Okay. Recognizing limits. Okay. Okay. Any other issues that come to your mind that could be involved here? We don't know. We just have to probe and ask. Okay. Procrastination could be a problem. Okay, taking on too much. That would relate to this. Yeah.
Maybe this relates to habit patterns, but just recognition of what's important.
Okay. Probably need to sort out important. What do you mean by that?
Oh, things that cause you to not be totally efficient in the first place. Things that you try to strive for, you can't, or something like that.
Okay, that's a possibility. In other words, all these could be a surface indicator that there's some other need down underneath that's being covered over by busyness. That's possible. Yeah, I was just asking, what would you probe for as potential areas to say, is this a need? Is this a need? How would you deal with this? Are these issues involved here? I think we don't know if they're all or any of them. We're just saying from what we have of our own experience, these are potential areas to consider.
In other words, not really knowing what the objective is.
Okay. Could be an unclear objective or objectives. Okay. Yeah. Situation could be okay. Could be normal. And the need? That's very good, Ron. Contentment.
This,
okay. Could be a problem of comparison. All right, we'll stop there. Now, if it were a matter of habit patterns, how would you counsel this individual?
I know what their habits are.
Okay. Two? No.
I think what we have to help them see is that why they do what they do, and help them see that that's their problem first before. In other words, let them accept that why they keep doing the same thing over and over and over.
Mm-hmm. So you'd want to sit with the individual, have them kind of lay out, this seems to be the pattern of life for me, and then ask them to, can you figure out why, what has led to that? What prompts you to keep doing that?
Just help them think.
Okay, so then help them to create an approach to making some changes and adjustments. All right, Cal? I was going to say simple in concept, extremely difficult in terms of application. Oh, good. I was hoping somebody would narrow this down a bit. All right. Again, I haven't picked out an individual to pick on that individual because it was so representative of many of the things that this group put out. So. So many issues that surfaced here that I think could relate to other things. Let me go to another one that could be, it's a little different. And it just adds a dimension. It's a good question. How can we balance the tension of pleasing God and pleasing people? Perspective. Have I already forgotten my I just reviewed a verse. Now I'm trying to quote it and I can't.
First Corinthians 10.
The context Paul is talking about the context of Romans 14.
He's dealing with
things that are not clear
cut.
So he in 31 he says,
whether you eat it or
whatever you do, do all to the glory of God. And then he says, don't give offense to
anyone,
whether it's the Jew or
the Greek or the church.
And then he says,
even as
I please all men
in all things,
not seeking mine own profit, but the profit of many that they may be saved.
So here's, we
tend to, in a context like this,
to get
is that like Matthew 6, enter into your closet, don't do your alms before men, and that kind of thing. Play your life to God. And
in one case,
I looked at what
he laid out,
saw the time frame, and said, Terry, I've got
these things
that you've asked for.
You wanted them all tomorrow.
There is no way that I can do that. Now, you know, we can
bring somebody else.
Take on this other project. We can drop.
One of these.
We can adjust
the time frame.
How would you like it handled?
Now,
I suppose
what I could have done
is stayed at work until
work
through the night if necessary, as I
sometimes think of
when I was really in a bind.
Get a
project completed. Grade depended on it. I find in business
things are remarkable.
Usually. And so there,
I took a chance on
saying, well, Roger,
and I have to
do this.
Everyone else
has to be done tomorrow.
I found your
court. You figured it out.
Okay.
Did that.
Okay.
He's my boss. I'm under him.
That's clear.
He could have had a Roger, this has become a pattern with you. And clearly you're in the wrong, John. And that would have been okay, too. Or he could have said,
which he did,
well, what I want you to do is
get this project, and what
you've done on that one is adequate
for our meeting tomorrow,
because it gives us enough data
to do our initial
discussion on it, and we don't need
to go any further from here
by tomorrow. So it's...
But what I had to do, I
felt, was in honesty
before God,
go to Terry and say, I can't do it.
What do you
want? So to
please God, the moral
issue was to be honest with Terry
and
leave him in a bad spot
with
the other men.
And
then I had to accept
whatever
he was going to give me. And it
seems to me that's the thing
of God and man.
And
some people,
for example, I've known of
a couple cases where marriages of
Nastaff
were in serious trouble. The wife had known it for years.
She
would not...
go and
seek help because she was afraid
that if she did,
she would affect her husband's career
with an avenues.
Now that is purely a man-centered view of that
her life
was lived on the level of pleasing God.
I mean,
pleasing man, not God. Because the evaluation
was,
how will this affect our career and status
with an avenues?
Not,
what do we need? What
kind of help does God need to give us so that we can
be
and do what he wants?
Does that,
by way of
illustration,
make anything muddier or more plain? Chris?
The question I pose on another question. Say, you know, we're talking about this environment. How do you deal with it? Are you not pleasing that?
I would have done the same thing that I did with Terry.
Is it developing relationships? The spirit of unity?
Ron, you want to speak to that? Yeah.
And I've
done that.
Yeah.
It's a matter of how urgent and important it is.
What has to be done.
And if he'd have said this needs to be done, I'd have called
Don Volley and
Linda in and said, guess what? We have a project. So, yes.
I was very, very sorry. This verse here that we're talking about. Okay. Because anyone who is to me, whether Jews, Greeks, or the Church of God, even I try to please everybody in every way. This is what Paul was saying. I said, well, how can he can do it? He cannot do it with everybody. And he is giving this counsel. But in chapter 9, he's talking to the church because they were giving him a hard time and critical for him.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, for those people to try to please everybody. And they say, is it possible? Because if he was experiencing it, let's try.
Yes. He is simply saying, my goal is to try
to please
people
where I'm not
creating some offense that's going to
hurt
or hinder their life.
And that's
so in 1
Corinthians 9,
you referred to that.
He said, I've made
myself servant unto all. To the Jews I became
a Jew.
To those that are under the law as under the law.
To those that are
without the law as without the law,
except
not without a law to God.
And so
he's clarifying that in terms of where there's a moral sense before God,
I don't violate
that to please anybody.
And
but insofar as is
possible,
I seek to work harmoniously
with
everyone. And in fact,
Romans 12,
where's the, it,
he's concluding,
what's
the verse?
In so much as lies within you,
live at peace with all men.
It's the same idea. Who knows the verse on that? Scripture memory
goes a lot
easier when you review it. Yes, thank you. Verse 18, 12, 18. So it's not
necessarily possible,
but he says, I don't go out blatantly
trying to offend people. Now, in terms of
the secular environment, Chris, I
came
into Ford Motor Company.
In fact, when I took the job interview,
the production manager called me in the day they hired me, and he said, I want you to know it's no Sunday school out there.
Sure,
I understand that. But their view of Christianity and my view are worlds apart. And the struggle came when I was asked to do one or two things
that I felt
were not really kosher.
I never knew
how you could manipulate production figures and costs to create a picture for, it was interesting. Our plant was old and decrepit. And so
when they were
afraid that the plant might be shut down, they ran, I think, number
three
cost effectiveness per unit in the nation of all Ford's assembly plants. Once it was clear that we were safe and Ford was going to keep the plant, then we started running toward the bottom in terms of cost effectiveness because they wanted plant improvement and wanted to justify it. Nothing had changed in the plant except the manipulation of numbers. And so I was asked to manipulate some numbers, and I said, I can't do that. I can give you the facts of my department, and you decide what to do with them. But I will not give you things just to make it look different. I'll tell you what's really going on. I had to do the same thing in the Army, and created quite a ruckus because they'd asked me essentially to falsify some records. I just said, sir, if you give me a direct order, I will put that in. But if you will not give me a direct order, I'm not going to change a thing. And, of course, he knew that that was such a blatant disregard of things that he couldn't do that. So he wouldn't. So then we had the big inspection and all the stuff that came out of that. So there are times when you just say, it didn't affect my friendship with the people. It just created more hassle. I think the biggest thing is being upfront, honest, and direct. It's all this mincing around that people do that tends to create real problems. And I don't mean, I hope I'm diplomatic with what I do, but there are certain things I just feel this, I want the relationship, but I'm not going to bend on before God on an issue that I think is wrong. Let's see. Someone had this. There is so much study time in Glen Gang activities that time to relax seems scarce. Where does recreation fit? That's another question, but it's related to that. What do you say to that?
Talked about the chapter where Moses went in the tent, and after Moses left, Joshua still remained there.
And so I get the picture that, you know, I don't know if it's a, it's not measuring your spirituality or not, but the less, you know, the ideal would be no recreation if you could handle that. But, you know, that's, you know, that's, okay. I've never been exposed to it, but I'm not a monk. But just to, there is a quote about, sense. I mean, because you can really overdo recreation, I think. And I think a lot of people, including myself, forfeit a lot because of the time that I do spend, say, free time and just goofing off and recreation. I think that the more you can cut it down, I think the better.
Okay. Let's define, what does recreation mean? A what?
It's a time much involved. Some people may be running, maybe sitting down, reading a book, or maybe, but it's something that changes the pace that you're doing.
Okay. Okay, let me backtrack again. The word recreation. What does that mean?